Welcome, welcome, one and all, to The Exchange on the Great American Broadcast Network. My name is Damian Chaplin.
And I'm Zoe.
And that's Zoe, who's just back from Auraland. That's a land. Only some of us get to go there. I am not one of those people, but...
Lucky, lucky me.
Yeah, lucky you. I mean... Yeah.
Lucky many other people, too.
Don't you wish everything were rainbows? And isn't that what it is? It's just everything's rainbows, right?
It's sort of like moving laser light pattern.
And loveliness. And I'm kidding, of course. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants auras. Definitely nobody wants the accompanying migraine. Blah.
I can knock that migraine if I get... medicine in there fast enough after I see the aura, though.
Yeah.
But the aura is sort of sickening. It's just like this moving pattern.
Yeah, I just get sick. That's kind of
you
how,
just get a bad headache.
No, well, I will get like sick to my stomach first. You know, I'll get nauseous for no reason, and then I will often get the headache afterward. Get the migraine.
And nausea does happen with it.
Yeah. It sure the heck does.
And what's crazy about migraines is all these people out there that get auras with migraines, we all see the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I find that absolutely incredible. We see the same thing, and we all see it for almost exactly 20 minutes.
Well, you guys are all...
So it's very strange.
You guys are all wired weirdly.
All of our different physiology, different... birthdays, times, latitudes, longitudes. I mean, there's just no rhyme or reason for us all to see the same thing.
Well,
it's just crazy.
I mean, you guys are all humans. You guys are all evolved from the same atom.
And it's not even the same cause for everyone.
Well, no. I mean...
So it's not like it's a common allergic reaction to a certain thing. Everybody's... different for the reasons that they have them, but yeah, we all see the same thing. I think it's very bizarre.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, ostensibly we all see the same color blue. We all see the same color red, although when I was a kid, I was fascinated with the idea that what if what you said was blue, I think looks like red, and vice versa.
I've had long, long conversations with myself over that matter.
Yeah, you know, and what if everybody... Because, I mean, how would you describe red without using any other color?
Even if you were using apple to try to associate the red, how would you know they're still seeing the same red?
Exactly. You know, I mean... The best you can do is point at something and say, that's red, but I still may be seeing blue, you know, and it's just called red in the world. You know, the world just calls it red. Or maybe what I see is red, you guys all think is blue. Yeah. But
that's the kind of stuff that can keep you up at night.
Ostensibly, we all see the same color blue. We all see the same color red. And therefore, it makes sense that we might all... have similar experiences with our brains. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Is Bert coming along?
Yes, he's got his stuff here already, just his self isn't here.
He moved all his stuff into the room already.
Yeah.
Cool.
Here he is.
Oh. Well, we were just talking about coming back from Auraland.
Yeah, I was commenting how interesting it is that we all see the same thing if you see auras before a migraine.
Oh, yes, that is interesting.
I find it a very bizarre thing because all of our causes for it are different. All of our factors are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I believe you used to have them and get the auras, too.
I still
too.
Get them occasionally.
Do you?
I don't necessarily get the headache. I often get the headache, although it's separate. It's just completely separate. The aura can happen all by itself. It doesn't have to actually be announcing something else is coming.
Yeah, my dad sees the auras but does not get the migraine. And there's a name for it. Oh, you, and you've seen the auras too?
Little jaggedy things.
Yeah, yeah, those are it.
But no headache. Huh. And it doesn't last very long.
Yes. Yeah.
Years ago, a friend, we were at a bar, a whole group of us chatting, and a friend gets out a napkin and he draws something. He says, "You ever seen something like this?" And he'd drawn a migraine aura.
Oh, yeah. It's so specific. I think I would know if someone was drawing it, you know.
Yeah, I said, "Where did you see that?" And he said, "I just saw it one day." I said, "Did you get a headache?" And he said, "No."
And your neurologist said that when you drew one, says that's the textbook picture of the crenellation and the...
He called it the fortification.
Yeah, fortification.
Effect. That was, the author of a book was a man, so it said it was a fortification effect. Hello, yes, we, quite near here, have a rock wall that looks pretty much like that with all the jaggedy edges, but it looks much more like a cut glass donut.
It changes shapes for me. Sometimes it's a straight line. Sometimes it's a C shape. That's really common for me. Like,
yeah, see, that's a part of the donut.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely see the C shape. I'll see the straight line, and every now and then it'll take its own life. But it sits there in the same spot, and then it starts to move away, either into my peripheral or today when I had one, it moved down out of my vision. So it went from up
as
high
long
to down low.
As blocking your vision, though, you shouldn't do anything that requires... close. You shouldn't try reading, for instance, or even working at the computer. Go watching television's okay if the TV's far enough away from you.
No, the best thing is to just shut your eyes, because at least then you're only seeing the aura and not everything else
That's
moving
true. You're
with
not
it.
Struggling to focus through the damn thing.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when it first starts out as a blurry spot in the middle of my vision, that's when I don't do anything, you know, with my vision. Do my very best to only look at things far away. Don't worry about it. Don't try and focus, that kind of thing. But it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon it's donut shaped. There's a hole in the middle that's clear, and I can look through that hole.
Maybe we're seeing another dimension. The possibilities of what we're really witnessing, and we don't know.
Yeah, but through that hole, I can see whatever it is I want to look at.
I think it's the beginning of a multiverse.
You guys are all picking up communications.
Yeah.
Extraterrestrial communications. And your brains are just desperately trying to interpret it in some form. And what our human brains get is jagged glass donut.
And I get the blank spot first, too. I call it the pre-aura. Like, I go, oh, no, I'm having, like, I can't focus on what's in front of me. And I go, oh, I'm about to get an aura. And then soon enough, the pattern will emerge.
Yeah, I see that as the beginning of the aura. I mean, if I get a blurry spot right in the middle of my field of vision, especially if it's in both eyes, I mean, hello, that's pretty much not a problem with my eye if it's happening to both eyes. I just wait until the blurry spot gets big enough that there's a hole in the middle that I can look through. Because that...
I think you need to meditate on that hole.
You don't want to add eye strain to it. I mean, come on, you can't do that.
I think you should achieve a certain level of... meditation on that hole next time and see what dimension you're looking at.
Well, as long as I wasn't trying to find focus, like I wasn't trying to read, I was okay. It many years ago, the man I interpreted for came into my office early one morning, and I said, "Oh, guess what? I'm having a migraine aura." And he says, "Oh, I better leave." I said, "Don't you dare. I can't do a damn thing as long as this is going on." But I could talk to him, even though that's a visual thing. I mean, talking in sign language, that's a visual thing. But it's so large that it doesn't matter. So I comfortably chatted with him until I could look through the middle of the aura, and then it was fine with me if he wanted to leave.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think it's just a very bizarre phenomenon.
Yeah, I at one point had migraine attack, like the right side of my body. It was really hard for me to hold my balance. I had to hold onto the walls when I walked. It was, yeah, and that was just a migraine effect. It was scarier than heck because I thought I was having a stroke, but that wasn't it. It was migraine.
Yes, the first time it ever happened to me with the auras, I got incredibly sick so soon after, and I didn't know what had happened to me. I literally thought maybe I had brain cancer because I saw crazy shit. Then I threw up and got really sick and violently ill with a headache. And then the next day, the same exact thing happened to me again. So the first time I had it, I had a cluster. And it happened like 3 days in a row, and I finally was able to get in to see a doctor, and he was like, oh, you're having auras with migraine. It's not cancer. You know, but I really thought I was going crazy.
It's not a tumor.
Yeah, I mean, it really felt insane. And I do get the headaches, but if I take enough ibuprofen fast enough when I see the aura, I can beat the headache.
Yeah, that,
When Nancy was having her whole thing with them, there's going to be stomach migraines too.
Oh, yeah, I used to get terrible stomach aches. Yeah.
There is actually a higher level of serotonin in your gut than there is in your brain. And migraines are thought to be caused by serotonin spikes or dips or
Damien just mentioned feeling sick to his stomach and then getting a migraine, but he does not see the aura. But you just said the same thing about feeling sick in your stomach first.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, nausea is a common thing that comes with migraines. And, you know, it's not uncommon for me to feel the nausea first before I start feeling the headache. And, you know, it's usually a flag when, you know, I just start feeling nauseous for no reason, you know, and I'm like, okay, maybe it's a migraine. And, you know, it seems weird to take Advil for nausea, but you better believe it works.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If it's migraine, it sure does.
Yeah. If it's a migraine, it 100% works.
I was going to say the first time I got an aura, I was at work. And I was reading for a blind woman, which was part of my duties there for some time. And I told her what was going on, that there I could. She's blind, and I'm telling her I'm seeing strange things. And she says, "Well, let me take you to the doctor."
Oh my gosh!
The doctor was in the building next door. They had an employee health clinic there. And so she leads me on over there, and we sit down and tell the doctor that I'm seeing things, and I describe it. And I was already seeing a neurologist for migraine. And so she called him up, and she repeats to him what we just told her. And he said, it's a migraine, or I give her narcotics and send her home.
Wow, you were lucky to discover what was happening so fast. I was really afraid.
Well, it helps if you're at work at a place that has medical doctors. On
Yeah, no kidding.
That's very convenient.
Yeah.
When I first started working there, a woman said, if I ever had a heart attack or a stroke, I pray to God I'm at work when it happens, because they get the ambulance here in like under a minute. And they had medical staff right there, and then they would transport you to the hospital at their leisure, since they'd already taken care of the immediate needs.
Cool. Well, what else is going on? Oh, I should mention before we go any further, already 15 minutes in, I should mention we will be off the next 2 weeks for vacation. So we will be back on July the, come on calendar, July the 21st will be the next time we are back. And we will be back to discuss the premiere episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 3.
You going anywhere exotic?
We are going to go camping. Not very exotic, but it's not at home.
I remember I went
camping
against my mother, and I had one of those Colemans where you had to pump it up.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it had totally dried out.
Uh-huh.
So I went back to the back and pulled the dipstick out and put some oil on the leather, and it worked.
Okay. All right.
You probably have bottles for your cooking rather than the old pump.
Yes. The bottles are so much more convenient. Yeah. Actually, I was thinking what we really need is one of those stupid adapter hoses so that we can bring the large propane tank instead of having these small little Coleman bottles.
Did my headphones die or did you kill it?
No, your headphones must have died.
Still got a couple of tanks over here.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's getting quieter.
Yeah, I know.
Device.
Yeah. So, don't worry about it. We got everything we need.
Okay.
So, that's what's going on. We won't be here the next couple of weeks because we'll be on vacation.
The rest of the time will be staycation.
Staycation, yes. The rest of the time will be staycation. What else? I guess that's really. I did talk about my Megatron last week. Would you like to hear how much it sold for last night?
Yeah. Wait, remind us what you bought it for.
I paid $75 for it. $74.
And you sold it for?
$440.
Oh, yay, team. Congratulations. That's great.
Yes. Well, that's kind of where I expected it to be, you know. But, it was, and I put it in the, gave it to FedEx today. And someone's going to be a happy camper. So, yeah.
That's just super duper.
Yeah, and of course, now you're just keeping your eye out, hoping that thing comes again, but it might be even a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't know how rare it is to find $74 Megatrons. But, I just thought I would let you guys know, because I did mention it last week.
That's probably your biggest flip to date.
Oh, by far, biggest flip. By far. It's actually the only real auction I've ever done, where I just could put it up for auction and I knew it was going to get a good price and I just sat back and let it happen, you know. And they were bidding it up all week. It sat for, you know, they bid it up to over $300 by day five. And it kind of sat there until the last minute when it went up to $440.
Yeah. Is a Megatron sort of a unicorn that's just in and of itself is very valuable? Or
it is very valuable. Yes, it's what some people would call a grail item to have in their collection, to have a G1 Megatron in the box like that, because you know, I mean, these were toys. Yeah. I was telling Zoe yesterday that there was a shift in toy making when they shifted away from making toys out of metal after World War II and started making toys out of plastic. And so our plastic toys in the 80s, 70s and 80s just deteriorated. You know,
some of them are very high quality, and I suspect they're still around.
Oh yeah, no, and
that's what this one
was.
That's
what this one was. Yeah. If you treat them nicely, they will last. But these are toys, and they are mostly made of plastic, and you know, plastic can break if you just drop it. And so,
very few have lived over the years. Yeah. Was the point?
Yeah, that's the point. And also, like the box. The box was 41 years old. So, you know, just the very fact that a piece of cardboard lasted 41 years, a piece of, you know, color printed cardboard, that's it. It makes it quite valuable. So, yeah, it might be a once in a lifetime thing, but it sure was it sure was fun. It was a lot of fun, you know, typing up that listing. Because I type up good listings, man. If you go to my eBay store, I guarantee you, you're going to find good listings. I sell my shit, you know, if you bother to click on the description. You will get me selling my shit, you know, talking it up. I'm very good at talking my shit up.
Yeah, I just finished a detective story set up in Minnesota or somewhere up there, and a couple of bad guys hijacked a whole truck, semi-truck full of Legos. Uh-huh. Selling them off a little bit.
Uh-huh. Is this the new version of hijacking a cigarette truck? They don't have cigarette trucks anymore, but they do have Lego trucks. There was a guy who was just in the news. They hijacked a truck full of Nintendo Switch 2s as it came out of the factory on its way to GameStop, I think it was. Yeah, it was a whole truckload of them, and it was like $140,000 worth, $120,000 worth of Switch 2s. That's funny.
But when they were having all these burglaries and break-ins at dispensaries, somebody wrote that, you know, they shouldn't be stealing product. They should be going after all the pipes. That's where the real money is.
All the pipes?
Yeah, all the glass pipes, you know, and all that.
Really? Do you think that's where the money is?
This is what somebody was saying, and like the...
I don't know. They're breakable, you know, and I don't know. They're maybe recognizable because each one's one of a kind, right?
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Yeah, and so they may have photographs of their inventory, and so they're much more traceable than, you know, flower marijuana would be. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not exactly a criminal, so don't ask me these things. I'm not exactly... an expert on it. Zoe, you saw two movies. Do you want to share about them?
Are you talking about the Transformer movies?
No. Although we did watch those.
Oh, movies that I saw in the theater with Belle.
Yes.
What was the second one?
The dragon one.
Oh. Yeah, first we saw the How to Train Your Dragon. I don't need
Live
to see
action
it again.
Remake.
It was okay. It was just like the cartoon version. It was sort of pointless.
How do you feel about the cartoon? Was it just okay?
Loved the cartoon.
Loved the cartoon, but you didn't love this.
No.
Was it because it was live action? Because wasn't it basically
the same
movie?
Not necessarily, but you know, you can get away.
I did not see the movie.
You can get away with a lot more when it's just animation. And so therefore, any of the weak points or plot flaws were irrelevant because it was live action. And
it was
so they couldn't include.
Harder for you to suspend your disbelief
when
it was live action.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things happening that are impossible and weird. And so, you know, yeah, so I totally didn't need to see that one.
Okay, and then the other one.
And the other one was 28 days.
Years.
28 years.
Later.
Later.
28 years later, folks. That's the entire title.
And it was a very weird movie, and I liked it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had not seen any of the previous ones.
I had not seen either of the two before. I sort of... knew it was a zombie movie, and a little bit you had mentioned when I told you I was going, you mentioned a few things about the original films that I wasn't familiar with.
I saw the first one, not the second one.
But I went in there not really knowing what to expect, and, you know, Isabel loves horror movies, so we go to the movie, and I like zombie flicks and movies, and... it was so good. It was really weird. It was obviously filmed in another country, Britain, perhaps.
Britain, yes.
And and it had weird, you know, I love it when zombie flicks have a new trope because I get so tired of all the same plots, you know, the same things. And they had some different differences about it that were noticeable and quite... remarkable, actually. And it was just really weird, really gory, and really good.
Okay.
Yeah. I was glad I went to see it. Okay. Now I kind of want to see the other two.
Okay. I'm not sure if I want... Do you recommend that I go see it or that I see it?
I would definitely watch it with you again if you wanted to see it. And yeah, I do. I think you'd like it. It's just, I know you're not quite as gory as I am.
I'm not a fan of gore.
And there is some gore, but it's not horrendous grisly gore compared to what you've seen before and other things. I think it'll be fine. The interest of it, the weirdness of it, makes it kind of worth it to see it.
Gotcha. Okay. Bird's got his head up.
During the 30s, when we were occupying Haiti, there was a whole subgenre of voodoo and zombie books and magazines and whatnot. I guess we're really interested in that.
You know, and this movie, like, goes into these weird, like, history moments that you don't really understand what's going on. Like, you know, it's very, like, World War II-ish in time looking. And, it's, you know what, is just a weird zombie flavor, that one. I kind of liked it. Yeah, it was just different. But I can see that, I mean, one of the things in the movie that was kind of just an amusing part was that there was never any modern technology in the movie, because this is all taking place at a place and a time that had basically been taken over by sickness
28 years later.
Right. And so you don't see that aspect. They're living this, like, really simple life, surviving out on this kind of island, the people that survived. And then there's this mysterious soldier there, and, you know, there's a lot in this movie that's just not explained. But anyways, he pulls his phone out, and he's got a freaking modern phone. And so you realize in that moment so many things. First of all, you realize this plague or whatever happened didn't happen everywhere. Mm-hmm. That there's still, and he was hiking and talking about his friend that's a delivery driver and makes good money being a delivery driver. And you're just like, what is the guy rambling about? Because right now you're immersed in this culture and these people that are just completely, you know, old time. And then he pulls his phone out, and he's got a picture of his girlfriend on it, and she's got big old collagen lips. She's so, you know, done of fake eyelashes, collagen lips, whatever. And he's like, and the other kid that's there is like, oh, I know someone that happened to. They ate a lot of shellfish and looked just like that, you know? And it was just one of those moments where, you know, you're watching, like, non-technology meet technology, and you're realizing several weird things about the film that, you know, wasn't really explained. So you didn't know that life went on in other places of the world after this disaster, that you're thinking it's everywhere. Now, maybe I would have known more had I seen the previous two movies. I don't know. But it was good. I thought it was worth seeing. And I think you would like it, too.
What rating would you give it?
I give it an A.
An A? All right.
I really liked it.
Okay.
It was weird and different.
Okay. Great. That's a great review. Thank you.
You're welcome. You don't need to see How to Train Your Dragon live.
Okay, all right. Thumbs down on that guy. How to Train Your Dragon Live. Okay, well, okay. So I got two pieces of news real quick. Oh, wait, first, 2.5 pieces of news. The half piece of news, of course, is that today is June 30th. We never even mentioned that this is a live show, and you can call us at gabnet.net. Click the Zoom button on the right-hand side of the screen, and you can come and talk about it. Anyway.
Mondays at 6:30.
Except for the next two Mondays. today is June 30th, and it is International Asteroid Day. Whee! Yes, according to NASA, June 30th is International Asteroid Day, a global event to raise awareness about asteroids.
I thought we had to make a cake for our favorite asteroid, like a birthday party.
A global event to raise awareness about asteroids. Is it? Okay, so I have questions. Just with that one question, just with that one sentence, is this really a global? Is this really global? This event? Okay, well, no. Let's back up.
Telescope.
Let's back up. Let's back up before you even ask if it's global. Let's ask: is this really an event?
Is it tied in with any of the meteor showers?
It's just a global event to raise awareness about asteroids. So question one, is it an event at all? Question two, is it in fact global? Question three, is there a problem with the current level of awareness the public has with asteroids?
They'll improve their chances of funding if they can scare the shit out of everybody.
Question four, what awareness is there regarding asteroids that the public needs to know or can even know without being a NASA scientist themselves? Is this a recruiting event to try to recruit asteroid experts
so that I suspect it's a funding event
and that will
improve their funding,
that will increase the net awareness about asteroids?
Your article says, why do we study them?
Yes,
did
yes,
you read
no.
why?
No, and I should mention that the other half of the sentence is, in fact, and what we're doing to study them. So, June 30th is International Asteroid Day, a global event to raise awareness about asteroids and what we're doing to study them.
You have to make sure you give them lots of funding.
That's going to help.
Then they can hire more people and they can look at more asteroids.
My final question, is International Asteroid Day merely a plot to make us podcasters bring up obvious questions and therefore be talking about asteroids, even though we don't actually know anything about them? We are, in fact, making more people, all 12 of them, aware of asteroids. Is that the actual cause of this event, or the actual goal of this event?
It's just to make
us say asteroid as many times as possible. You know?
I'm sure that's it.
And therefore raise the awareness, the asteroid awareness, you know, the average asteroid awareness up by a notch just by everybody saying asteroid a bunch of times. I mean, that ought to do it, right? So, okay, I have questions. NASA, get a hold of us, will you? I know you're listening.
Or Musk.
No, I don't want to hear from him. NASA. No, this is International Asteroid Day. It is about what NASA is doing to study them. So, yeah, give us a call, NASA. Go to gabnet.net, click the Zoom button on the right-hand side of the screen. You'll join our waiting room, but don't call until the next... Don't call till like 3 weeks from now. Okay. And as we are ostensibly a journalistic endeavor here, we should mention we have a couple deaths I just want to mention real quick. One of which being Bill Moyers.
Yeah.
Who was just a legend in God,
TV journalism.
Journalism is the word I was looking for. A legend in journalism. He worked with President Johnson and was instrumental in creating what we know as the public broadcasting system, aka PBS. And honestly, a lot of what you hear from me and so forth simply would not exist without people like Bill Moyers paving the way with reliable news sources like PBS. So we should acknowledge the passing of Bill Moyers this last week. And yes.
And Trump is trying to just go away public broadcasting.
Yep. It's really important that we keep PBS going. I don't know that it will actually go away, but Yeah, it's kind of like them trying to privatize the post office. I mean, they keep trying, and I'm just not sure they're ever going to actually do it. Because it's just too popular. I mean, conservatives and liberals alike watch PBS. We all like the mail.
The right wing doesn't like the post office because it was unionized and a lot of blacks work for it.
Except that they all get mail. And they all recognize the importance of the postal service. And that's why, you know, it never really goes anywhere. Because, you know, those Republicans are still citizens. And guess what citizens get? It's mail. They need to be able to vote by mail. You know, they don't want anybody else voting, but they need to vote, and they're going to do it by mail.
One thing about the public broadcasting system, there's a lot of little tiny FM stations, PBS, all around the red states, all over the world, and they get news from that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
They want to get rid of that.
100%, 100%. Good luck with that. I cannot wait for our dystopian future. You know, we've been predicting it for decades and decades, and boy, I just can't wait for Blade Runner to come true. It's going to be awesome. And our other, I mean, he predicted it decades ago, and here we are, you know. All we're missing is the drug in our water to control our minds. And honestly, I don't know, maybe that's fluoride. The Republicans would make you think so, or what's his name, RFK, would make you think so. Anyway, let's move on to our second death, and that is Star Trek death, and that would be one Harris Yulin. And you may not know him from that name, but you've probably seen him in something, because IMDb lists 138 screen credits dating back to 1970, including Kojak, Little House on the Prairie, Night Moves, Scarface, Ghostbusters 2, A Clear and Present Danger, Frasier, Training Day, 24, The Blacklist, Veep, FBI Most Wanted, and Ozark, and of course, also Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And you may be asking, who is this guy? I will just say the word Eamon Maritza. Do you know that name? Eamon Maritza. Star Trek Deep Space Nine in the 19th episode of DS9's first season, Duet, when he is the Cardassian in jail and Kira is talking to him, and he claims to be the Butcher of Galatep.
Oh, yes, I do remember that episode.
Yes, and it is an acting tour de force between the two of them, and he really just let it all go. Anyway, he passed this last week. And with that, we will use that as our very sad segue into our segment, Yes, We Are Not a Star Trek Podcast, where we discuss all the things Star Trek, every of the thing Star Trek. And in particular, this week, we're going to be talking about, Mom, you watched it. You guys watched it, right?
Yes.
Going to be watching going to be discussing Next Generation Season 6, Episodes 10 and 11, known as Chain of Command, Parts 1 and 2. These aired in December 14th and December 21st, respectively, in the year of our Lord, 1992. And you know what I forgot to look up? I want to look this up real quick. Anyway, while I'm looking this up, let's just go around. Mom, what did you think of these two episodes?
Well, they're very good.
Okay.
It just confused the hell out of me. You know, the whole plot where this guy comes on as a martinet, and it works for him. You know? Was that intended? Was he just playing a role?
Yes, he is just playing a role. No, he's not actually playing. I think he is actually an asshole. But I think, you know, okay.
Wait, who are we talking about? The captain?
I think he's talking about Jellicoe. Let's. What did you think? Before we get into the specifics,
Jellicoe from Cats.
Yes, I. Yes.
I really like this double episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it gets a little hard watching Picard being tortured so long, but I really loved that scene with Riker where he sort of took charge and told the other captain off, well, this is what I think of you.
Yeah.
And that was a great scene.
Yeah, this...
And, I mean, the new captain is so rude. I mean, you have to hate him. Except it's always one of those, you know, what a great actor.
Captain Edward Jellicoe, played by Ronnie Cox, the legendary Ronnie Cox, who you may have seen in Beverly Hills Cop. You may
billion have seen everything.
Him, you may have seen him in Total Recall. You may have seen him, yeah, in a billion things. And he's kind of always an asshole.
Yeah, he's always an asshole. Yeah, I really like...
Yeah, and...
yeah.
I think that he comes in hot. He comes in hot. Not just his character, but Ronnie Cox, the actor, just hits the ground running. And it's like almost... You know, I mean, this is a Hollywood actor who's coming on board here and just, like, acting the shit out of everything. And it's almost like the actors of Star Trek, the actors on TNG were as stunned as the characters were to have this guy walking on the set. Because he really does just, he lights the place on fire. And, I mean, I love Ronnie Cox, and I have loved him. He's classic 80s icon. I think he really, really knocks it out of the park in this. I don't think it was an act. I think that he is an asshole, you know, and he comes in and, you know, after he does his job, he kind of sheepishly leaves and, you know, he says, okay, Picard, there you go. And he says, okay, it was a pleasure serving with you. Bye-bye. You know, and yeah.
Well, it was a character you couldn't quite hate because you almost agreed with some of the things he did and the way he did them. It just, he had his own style.
He did have his own style. And of course, he was successful at the end. So it's easy for us to not question whether what he did was correct because it got us to the correct ending. But one does have to wonder, planting mines on Cardassian warships in Cardassian space does seem like an act of war. Jellicoe did it anyway.
And you're left not knowing if he really intended to strand Picard or if his plan the whole time was to act chevalier about it.
No, I think that I think that Jellicoe was in fact, maybe we'll just talk about Jellicoe for the next 15 minutes, but I think that Jellicoe was in fact the quintessential Starfleet officer. He was just a little more militaristic than we're used to. And
play 3D chess.
And he was a strategist. You know,
he had them lie to play along with his routine that he wanted to produce.
And he's part politician, you know. And yeah, so he lied and he cheated and he manipulated people to get his way, and we all patted him on the back for a good job because you know he did in fact fulfill the mission. And everybody came out okay. And it was, in fact, partially because of the excellent job that he did. So I really did think that he wanted to retrieve Picard at all costs. You know,
if the Cardassians hadn't have been up to something nefarious there, then I think his tactics in the initial stages of confronting them and opening up conversations was really appropriate. The whole lying thing. I mean, I thought it was kind of a smart tactic, except for he got bit in the butt because, it was all fake.
I really like the negotiation. We're kind of just skipping right to, Well, anyway, I really like the negotiations between the Cardassians and Captain Jellico. You know, there's this political intrigue going on where, you know, because the Federation is ostensibly America, right? It's Western. A Western-style nation. And Cardassians are clearly not. So, the Federation sending in a very small infiltration team and going through steps to erase any record of it so that there can be plausible deniability of Picard and his team's existence in the first place, and then Jellico lying about it to the Cardassians, saying, "We don't know anything about that," and the Cardassians seeing right through it, and Jellico knowing the Cardassians are seeing right through it. And, you know, I mean, it really, I mean, as a younger person, you know, it really did. I really like this kind of political intrigue, and it really kind of showed you a different side of the Federation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you logically, of course, the Federation has to have hawkish negotiators like this. Otherwise, we'd get bowled over, right? Naturally, any nation is going to have these kind of negotiators, these really bullish and hawkish type negotiators. And so, it's really interesting. It's kind of a leftover from when we were actually in wartime. You know, now we don't have wars anymore. We just have little, you know, things.
And sort of like Trump now, but Nixon, it was a big thing. Well, he's crazy. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, exactly. And his tactic, where he storms out in the negotiation and then he immediately tells Riker and Deanna, you know, go back in there and tell him he has to be more reasonable because I'm such a loose cannon. That's actually a really great negotiating tactic. It's highly manipulative. You know, it's really him pulling the alpha dog he specifically brings up Timberwolves and he specifically says kind of like he's being he has to be the alpha dog here, otherwise they will be the alpha dog. I really like this. We should mention Golemek is the guy who is facing against Jellico at the negotiation table, the tall, skinny one. His delivery is fantastic. You know, it's great. They came up with a guy who could really fill the other half of the room from Ronnie Cox, who's, you know, just exploding on the other side of the room. And he is keeping this slow, steady tone to his voice and over-pronouncing things.
And the wicked smile.
He really does look very snake-like, you know. Yes. And he's narrowing his eyes, and he's got that big grin. Yes, he's got that giant toothy grin. When he smiles, you're like, oh God, he really does seem like a predator. His name is John Durbin. We should shout out John Durbin. Really great, great performance opposite Ronnie Cox. I did write down a huge amount of things here. I do want to mention one little thing here. This is kind of an inside joke that makes fun. It's funny to me. In this episode, we see the formal changeover of command from Picard to Jellico, and then back from Jellico to Picard. And there is the phrase, "I relieve you, sir," and the proper response is, "I stand relieved." And this is the first time we've heard this in Star Trek. The last time we've heard this, I don't know if you recall, the last time we've heard this chronologically was in the Star Trek 2009 movie. At the very end, when, you know, Kirk is forgiven for everything, and he's given command of the Enterprise. And Pike, played by Bruce Greenwood, rolls in on a wheelchair, and Kirk walks up to him and says, "I relieve you, sir." And Pike looks up at him and says, "I am relieved." And everybody laughs because, oh, you know, he's making a funny, "I'm relieved," you know, but I think it's funny because the proper response is, "I stand relieved," but he can't stand because he's in a wheelchair. And so it's like,
I sit relieved.
Yes. And so they were probably like, I wonder if the writers were like, oh yeah, the proper response is "I stand relieved," but then we can't write that, can we? No. So anyway, other guest star, obviously, David Warner, the great David Warner, the late great David Warner, who is, of course, in everything. This is his second appearance in Star Trek. I was a little confused, or not confused, I was a little like, they're going back to the well again with this actor, because he was just Chancellor Gorkon in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, which was the prior winter. Which was in 1991. So here he is in the following winter, 1992, playing Gul Madred, the Cardassian who tortures Picard. And you may know him from Tron, or The Omen, or my yearly classic, The Christmas Carol, the 1984-83 Christmas Carol with George C. Scott. He plays Bob Cratchit, and so I see him every year in that role. And yes, we love David Warner. Just love, love, love him. He is one of my favorite actors. Bob rest his soul. And we'd love to see him here. He actually had three roles, because he was also in Star Trek V as the American, or no, American, as the Federation envoy on Nimbus 3. What else do I got here? I love seeing Data in red. This is the first time we see Data in red. This is also the episode where Jellico tells Deanna, "Hey, I'd really rather you wore a uniform." And as Marina Sirtis kind of says, has said in interviews, she's incredibly grateful that they wrote this in there, because she was tired of wearing these damn jumpsuits. She wanted to wear a uniform like every other woman.
Because she wasn't being taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Except dressed differently.
Yeah, and so she was very happy that they wrote this in for her, because now she could, and you will see it going forward in Next Gen, even though we're already in season six, halfway through season six. There's only another season and a half left. But we will see this going forward, her wearing the uniform more and more, until finally she ditches the dress thingy and she only wears the uniform, I believe, through most of season seven. So, yes, this is where that came from, which is great. Great, because honestly, she looks much, much better in the uniform.
Yeah, so much better.
You know,
better.
She looks
right when he
great.
Said that, you're thinking particularly, God, that's not great on her.
Yeah, and all she's wearing one of the unflattering jumpsuits, one of those unflattering jumpsuits. And as soon as you actually said it, as soon as she walks out of the room, you said, yeah, why is she not wearing a uniform? And that's exactly, you said that as I was writing down, why isn't she wearing a uniform anyway? And of course, the answer is writers, you know, and possibly Jean wanted a female who was not in a uniform, and they will follow. They follow that tradition all the way through Voyager. No, all the way through Enterprise with Jolene Blaylock. And
sure do, but the new Treks, women are treated like actual people.
Oh, you imagine that!
Imagine that
on Star Trek.
Sometimes the entire sword fight is all women. They just don't really make a big difference here. You might be men, you might be women. Whoever you are, you're going to do it.
This damn Trek is so woke now. I mean, come on.
We love it.
God, get woke out of my Trek, man. I'm kidding, of course. I do like, they just kind of, you know, see, This is a two-parter, but honestly, this could have stood the DS9 four-part treatment. You know, this really could have been an epic arc. And because I wanted more discussion on the efficacy of torture. You know, there's a great scene. I mean, most, I'd say a good full half of the second episode is quiet dialogue between Picard and Gal Madred in the torture scenes. And the great revelation where Picard tells Gal Madred, you know, haha, you fucked up. Now I'm just going to see you as a 10-year-old kid with a broken arm, you know. What's that?
Six-year-old
with a broken arm, yeah. And I would have liked to have seen more discussion about the efficacy of torture, because at the end, of course, the big stinger is Picard confesses to Deanna that he really maybe did see five lights, you know. And I'm as Deanna, I would have said, yeah, except he had this thing, you know, connected to your heart and your nervous system electrically, you know, you could have been seeing anything he wanted you to, you know. All it takes is drinking too much alcohol and you'll see five lights. I mean, so don't worry about it. that's what I would have said. I like, there's a brief touching on the efficacy of the Cardassians spending so much of their budget on the military. They touch on it very briefly that, you know, the Cardassians have militarized themselves into oblivion, basically. And now they have no choice but to maintain that military indefinitely. Kind of sounds familiar, don't it?
No, guns and butter.
So, yeah, I would have loved to have seen more discussion of that. What do I got? And yeah, I mean, just more of the political intrigue. More. I mean, I could have gone with a whole episode and a half of just the political back and forth between the Cardassians and the Federation, you know. Bring Nechayev back in and have her, like, in the other room, like, giving Jellicoe, you know, almost... burn. That's my gong. you know, have them almost doing like a courtroom lawyer type thing where they let's go to a recess and now let's strategize some more. You know, I could have really gone for more of that, but I guess this was 1991, 92, and serialized Star Trek was not a thing. Two-parter episodes was about all we could wish for, although Best of Both Worlds and Family really is a three-parter. So, anyway, that was that. I guess I don't have anything else. Nope. I hate the stupid, the cave set. if you watch Next Gen and DS9 and Voyager and Enterprise, they all use the same damn cave set. And you just get so tired of it over and over. You're like, oh, it's the damn cave set again. You know, at least they could have taken a, go back to Vasquez Rocks, man. And then we would have gone, hey, man, it's Vasquez Rocks. All right. Instead of, oh, man, it's the stupid cave set again. What you got, Bert, before we head out?
I saw a license plate on Saturday when I was driving down to Concord.
Only one? That's amazing.
And it was a little red car. I was right behind it. And it ended up DOGDRUL. Dog drool.
Dog drool. Okay. And okay. And with that,
I'm gonna guess they have a mastiff.
Going out to all of our droolers. All of our drooling fans out there. Mom and Bert, thanks for joining us this week. We will see you in 3 weeks.
Okay, on July 21st.
After the premiere of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 3.
All right.
That's our homework.
That'll be our homework.
Yep. Okay, see you then.
Bye, you guys.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And that'll do it for us as well. Please check out all the wonderful offerings the Great American Broadcast Network has to offer. That would be this show, The Ramble, The Intersection, The Arena, many others. Check them out. Gabnet.net is where you find them. I'm Damien Chaplin.
And I'm Zoe.
Have a great week. Have a great next 3 weeks. We will be back on July 21st. And until then, remember, when it comes to great conversation, the X marks the spot. Good night.
Good night.
Blah, blah, blah. That's a wrap.